I am the person with the talent of doing this.
It's like people say that, like, oh, I had a horrible childhood and blah, 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 and this is why I... You know what? I had a wonderful fucking childhood.
You did?
I had a great childhood. Very happy, family, blah, 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 all that fun bullshit, but you know what? I still turned out to be as fucked up as I am now.
Hello and welcome to Cinema Subculture, the podcast where we discuss everything strange, obscure and downright messed up in the world of movies. My name's Gary.
And my name's Simon.
This is episode 28.
Today we're going to be looking at Lucifer Valentine's Black Metal Veins. Gary, how do you synopsisize this?
Right,
being a documentary?
Yeah, it's a documentary which follows a group of heroin addicts in Virginia, USA.
Right, okay.
It's an interesting project. Well, it was originally conceived as being about black metal.
Yeah, I kind of wondered that, because it definitely has, it's there initially and always there in the background, but then by the end of it I was like, how does this refer to, like, because they're playing in a band and, that feels like another film almost.
One of the main characters, Brad, had contacted Lucifer Valentine and he started documenting their lives, and that was the kind of story that came out. Yeah, so it just kind of follows their lives, I think, over like a period of a year or 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So obviously we covered the Vomit Gore trilogy previously.
Mm.
We looked at that. Is this his first documentary he's made?
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on this film, Gary?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I'm a bit of a sucker for his style anyway. Mm-hmm. When I heard, like, that he was doing a documentary, I was a bit like, I don't know. Because his style is something that's very... it's kind of the antithesis of what you think of his documentary being, like, a kind of objective recording of a truth. In a way, like, the ideal might be just like a static camera, which doesn't move, whereas his style relies heavily on editing and is very composed. But I mean, thinking about it after seeing it, I guess if it hadn't had his imprint on it, it might just be another drug shockumentary or something that you might see like on TV. But it's his style that makes it more interesting in the end, I think. Plus, he came across a bunch of incredibly charismatic personalities, which I don't know, I kind of love them.
It reminded me of like the kids from Kids,
right? Mm.
And like this could be what they would grow up to be. Remember the end of that film? It shows you a bunch, you know, the kind of the homeless, I don't know, for some reason it just kind of reminded that could be like, you know, those characters could be these characters, you know, these real people. Sorry, now, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that first interview with Raven, the main female character, I'm just, like, sucked in right away. Because I just love what he does, cutting up the conversation. So it's, like, really kinetic and all over the place.
Repetition of words.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just in there right away. Pretty much love it.
Cool. Well, I'm a bit muddled with this film.
Okay.
I don't know how I feel about it completely. I completely agree with you. I love his style. For first started, I wasn't sure how interesting it was going to be if it kept up, because there was a lot of kind of very his style, sound design, things like that at the beginning. And I wasn't sure how much information we were going to get from the characters and time with them.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I can't remember what part it was. It was when there's a bunch of the guys that head out to get like beer or biscuits or something like that. They're going out for something, and there's just some cuts. And it's not even cuts, it's like dissolves almost like into like them going out and stuff like that.
Right.
And I just realised that I was in, you know what I mean, in my head. I was just really enjoying the visual style of it. And it is really compelling listening to these people, the stories and they, you know, you do kind of like fall for them as characters. But my problem comes near the end when it feels like he's not documenting anymore.
Right. Okay.
I mean, you mentioned something to us before I'd seen it, and I think I know what it maybe was you're talking about. But I don't know. I had a bit of trouble with the sex scenes and things.
Right.
Where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, I felt he wasn't an objective documentarian. It was maybe not leading, maybe not even suggesting do this, but the mere fact that he was present led them to do certain things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two essentially rapes in the end of the film, yeah. I would say. Had the camera not been there and that was going on between boyfriend, girlfriend, they're together and they're happy with that, that's fine. But for me, it felt like it was happening because the camera was there.
Okay.
It felt like they were showing off a wee bit. Up until that point, up until the, what's her name? Was it Autumn Misery?
Autumn Misery, yeah.
Up until that stuff. And obviously they were being really, really sexual together anyway, and so were Raven and her boyfriend. But what happened with the characters, like the Raven and her boyfriend at the end thing, like that seemed like so different than what he was being portrayed as or what his thing was, you know what I mean? And that just seemed to come out of nowhere. Okay, for me, like it seemed to be like, well, they've done it to the other girl, so now we'll do it.
Yeah.
Or something, you know what I mean? It was really random to me. I don't know. And in something like Vomit Gore Trilogy a film where obviously the first film of that was largely almost documentary because it was just really recording of her life and then him editing a film too, effectively, you know, eventually at some point he started making a film with a narrative in his way, but it started off as just them as a couple, you know, and recording stuff. So had it been that led there in a film, I could have accepted it and been like, right, well, that's horrible, and it's portraying something like we spoke about, you know, portraying something that's real, that is, it needs to be honest about how it portrays it, right? But to me, this felt like, it just felt like they were showing off.
Okay.
Especially like when the first girl, and then it's when we were Raven as well, but they were literally like, you know, holding her face up and the camera was right in her face.
Right, aye.
I had a problem with that.
Okay, right. We should maybe clarify what happens at the end.
Sorry, I'm going off and I say that's just something that I had a strong, that didn't put me off the film completely because I still feel there's a lot of like elements that I really enjoyed and really loved in the film, including the style of how he made it, you know, and the editing. I love his editing, I really do, and his sound design, and it's all, it just takes you in, and it's like a song almost. It gets into this rhythm, and you just get hypnotized by it. I'll stop there. Sorry.
Right. Well, the first hour of the film is a fairly straight up, kind of. He does. I think it was a good choice to do a kind of fly in the wall style.
Yeah.
Where the characters are pretty much doing what they would do anyway, and he's just kind of in there, which I think works really well. The last section of the film, other than what you're talking about, does move to a kind of more traditional talking head style, where he interviews Brad's parents, I don't really have a problem with, but it does go into more conservative documentary styles.
I feel it worked because it hadn't been done to excess at the rest of the documentary. Had it been that the whole way through, it would have felt like a thing. But this felt like they were bouncing off what the characters had said to then go to this kind of like stepping outside their world into the real world almost, you know what I mean? Had it been done anymore, I think it would have been too much. But
it's interesting, it gives a bit more context to Brad as a character.
I didn't know it was him that contacted him, so it makes more sense now that he was the kind of the focus, because I kept expecting to go to like Raven's mum or something like that, you know. And I take it they did at some point because they had videos of her as a kid and stuff stuff. But anyway, sorry.
Essentially, what the film does in the last third is the characters become, well, they act out some kind of scenes, they become characters rather than being themselves. There's a rape scene, well, two rape scenes, and just some random crazy stuff. You thought it was a mistake to go into that territory. I think what he was trying to do was okay, I've got my standard documentary part, but maybe it might be interesting to take that and just make kind of move slightly more towards fiction. I think what he's trying to just sort of say something to make more a statement about the perils of drug use in a way. I just like the kind of trajectory of these characters.
And you may be totally right with that. Right. I mean that does feel like what he's doing. Mm. If you look at something like the Bunny Game, right? Like that, right. The girl in that was like volunteered. I think she went to them with the idea for the film or something like that, right? And she volunteered to be like rendered unconscious and let whatever happened happen, mm. right? And if that's what happened with the two girls in the film, if that's what he's going for, then you would think that's maybe what happened, right? Then I can understand that, but I feel like the way it was presented at the beginning, it's not clear that it's going into this like fictional world of like these become characters. You know what I mean?
Right.
It feels like they're showing off, and that they're, you know, it's like the drunk guy at the party, like, you know,
right?
Like, I don't know, you know? Like even just them like raving on her boyfriend having sex.
Yeah.
Right. Like the consensual sex part. It's like, why is he there? I don't. You know, as a documentary event, I don't see why somebody had to suggest that. Right. Mm-hmm. And if that was them, okay. But that's still not what they would normally do necessarily. You know, they would.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't have a camera there. Just but that bit, I can deal with. Even what it leads to with Raven, is that does she OD there?
Yeah.
She dies there.
In real life?
In the film there.
It's meant to be that she ODs, then she gets raped and dies. They rape her as she's dying.
And she's actually dead?
In the film, yeah.
No. But
not in real life, no.
No, right, because like that's what I was a wee confused about, because the characters spoke about her dying.
Yeah.
I thought that can't be her having died there, right? They wouldn't do it. I just didn't think he would cross that line. I thought that there would be something else happening with this film if that was the case. Mm. So is Raven alive then?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So because I was reading like some reviews online about it, and they were talking about like two characters died during the course of the making of the film. Mm. Now I was thinking, right, well they mentioned Chris dying,
right? Yeah.
And they flashed it up on screen, and that's fine. And okay, they mentioned about his mum passing away, but I didn't think that's what they were talking about. It seemed to be that they were talking about Raven, and I thought like, I don't know that. So that whole bit with her ODing is made up then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she doesn't OD there?
Probably not.
She's not...
Yeah, no.
Okay, right. Again, I mean, it's being presented as a documentary. I feel that you not have, like... I have an issue with, like, the kind of... The truthfulness of that, then.
Right, okay. Well, that's an interesting point, because that kind of line between fiction and truth is something that's permeated documentary, like, forever.
Because...
I did have your reservations the first time that I watched the film, and I'm
I've only watched it once, so maybe.
So at first I was like, "What's happening here?
Aye,
this isn't real, is it?" And then I thought, "All right, okay, right, he's doing what he's doing, just to do something crazy." But it depends what you're wanting. I mean, I think one of maybe the first controversial documentaries was like Nanook of the North,
right,
from 1922. Robert Flaherty directed a documentary about Eskimos or Inuit people, and what they did was, it was supposed to be like a day in the life of those people, but a lot of the scenes were shot for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, we'll show you how you build an igloo, but it wasn't like it was meant to be him like doing what he would do, but it was like staged for the camera type thing. But I think Flaherty would say something like, yeah, but I was trying to go for a higher truth rather than like being strictly matter of fact. Because I think in any documentary form, it's hard to capture 100% reality. Because if you're going to a subject and you're going to document it...
there's certain things you want to see
that
would be part of the person's life, but not necessarily part of the daily
going on.
And I understand that.
So if it's like a fisherman or something,
you don't want to see him on a day he's not cutting on. No, he's Sunday.
Aye.
The boat is broken.
Sure. it's like, okay, here's the first setup. We're gonna show you walking down to the river. Yeah, but it's, yeah.
I totally understand that, and I understand. Again, I feel that's fine when it's building an igloo.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily when it's maybe. Again, I wouldn't say he suggested anything. I mean, I don't know, right?
Mm.
But potentially, if suggesting stuff at the end, who knows? Like, you know, like, oh, why don't you do 3 caps of fucking stuff instead of 2? Right. Like that, you know. You know what I mean? Mm. And then say, you know, like, who knows what he suggests? I don't know, you know what I mean? So, like, when it's, like, someone's, like, life and potentially somebody who's vulnerable and impressionable, when they're in a high state,
right,
they may be more open to suggestion.
Well, I think they had signed contracts and stuff to say they were up for doing this. Some of the special features you see, talking to them, like, you've agreed we're going to do some...
I never saw the special features, so that's fair enough. That's probably my fault.
Okay.
And it was the same with the Vomit Gore trilogy. You saw them signing the stuff like that. And again, I feel because that was, like, this is a film...
Mm.
And this was like, this is a documentary.
Yeah.
I felt maybe like it just stepped over at the end. And it kind of, to me, in maybe search of something else, like going more down his route of like his style,
mm-hmm.
kind of sat like undermine some of the kind of interesting and like kind of emotional stuff that had come before it a wee bit. You know, kind of let it down a wee bit.
Right.
In my opinion,
yeah.
I felt that it was just a little undermined, the actual kind of content of the kind of the realness of it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it does undermine it as a 100% real documentary, mm-hmm. but I think in the end it makes it maybe more interesting mm-hmm. as something else.
I mean, certainly, I think watching it again, you know, maybe like, I don't know if my opinion would change on it, but watching that first time, I just felt that it did kind of step over a line for me in terms of like the realism,
right?
You know, okay. it was either like, well, this is real, because it was so ultra real and so upfront about like, this is going to be like completely like, you know, drug use at its basis form. Like, we're not going to sugarcoat anything, we're going to show you everything. And then it went like there, and then it's like, so you're led down this path. Which is fine if it's billed as a film to me, you know, I can go there with that, and I'm like, that's fine. Like you're showing stuff that could happen.
Yeah.
I understand that, but to me, at first it was because it was so much like this is them just living their lives.
Right. Yeah.
And then it went down that I was like, I don't understand. This feels like it feels all set up.
Okay.
Which as you're saying, it probably was then.
Yeah.
But and framed in the kind of in the documentary, it was like. It felt like insincere.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And if that's what it's meant to be, then I've misinterpreted it.
Right, yeah.
But...
I mean, not to move on to other films too much, but what's your thoughts on something like Catfish or these kind of
I've seen Catfish recently,
recent documentaries
actually.
Where that line, you really can't tell. Or something like, I didn't see it, but there was that one, I'm Not There.
The one about Joaquin Phoenix,
aye.
I enjoyed Catfish.
Mm.
I did. I definitely got the feeling at the beginning that it wasn't set up. I don't think any of it was manufactured.
Mm.
I feel that they were retelling it at the beginning.
Right, yeah.
Because they hadn't been filming it and they thought they set it up.
Mm.
But I feel that when they met have you seen it?
Yeah.
I feel that when they met the woman.
Mm.
I feel that was all like legit.
Yeah, yeah.
Think,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but I definitely felt at the beginning that it was like kind of they were telling the backstory.
Yeah, that's how I read
which
it.
Which I was okay with, you know what I mean? Because it didn't bother me because it was all factual stuff, but, you know, they were making it out as if it was happening, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But what did you think of that film, incidentally?
No, I really liked it. Yeah.
The guy's quite likable, I quite liked him.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's how I read it, that essentially it happened, but. What you were seeing was maybe massaged a wee bit.
Yes. But
so then again, like, it doesn't really bother me, but then it's saying it's moving away from documentary to being entertainment. But I don't know if you can really if you can have that strict divider anymore.
Well, okay, again, like you, I think it's to the, maybe I sound like a fucking BBFC person, right? Right? But I think it's the line is where the content is. It's like,
okay,
they can massage the reactions to her claiming that she's wrote this song and then find out on YouTube that it's not really, it's just a rip of like someone's acoustic set on YouTube, right? They can, and they can be like, oh, like saying the smart one-liners, whatever. It's not really hurting anyone or not leading someone to believe that someone is being raped or, you know, or
right,
using drugs that maybe they wouldn't usually use. I don't know, you know what I mean? Mm. Whereas this is like different. You know, it's like saying, you use drugs, don't you? Rape everyone, come on. Right. You know, like, I know that's really like silly, but I can let, again, with it's to come back to the like build an igloo. Yeah, right. I wouldn't, you know, I'm gonna build an igloo. I can't do it, but right, I wouldn't be doing what I've got a house there. You know what I mean? It's not really doing anything hurting anyone. It's, you know what I mean? It's just, it's showing like something that, yeah, like could be part of like naturally not hurting anyone's life.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas that felt like it was like to an extreme.
Mm.
Of, and there was just something about it that didn't sit right with me.
Okay. Mm.
And that's the best I can describe it, the fact that it felt like it was being, like it was someone showing off for a camera or
right, mm,
had been set up in some way. So like it felt like if that's what he was doing, was going into like a kind of more of his world of filmmaking.
Yeah.
I felt that it was too subtle change from the realism of the rest of it,
right, mm,
that it made me think this is like they're trying to be real here,
right,
and it's maybe it was just too, it was disturbing if it was real, you know, maybe that's what, you know, because it was nearly like it felt like a snuff film a little bit,
mm, mm-hmm,
which again if I knew that was what I was going in for and I chose to watch that, then that's fair enough, but this felt like fake.
Mm.
I don't know, I just felt they were pushing their own limits because he was there recording, okay, it rather than him just being there, which he was at the beginning, recording their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hanging out with them, just being incidental.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, that I'm glad that's the, I've been able to come to you and say, like, you know, the problems I had with it, and you can, you know, you're kind of clearing up maybe some of his intent.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
For me.
You could argue somebody went too far in the sense that there's the sex scene between Raven and her boyfriend, which is incredibly graphic, and it goes on a long time. That's in the uncensored version. There's a theatrical cut as well, which cuts that down to make it more, you don't really see as much as like a standard like Hollywood sex scene or something, but arguably better. I don't know if you needed all that. In the interest of documentary, a heroin addict having sex, her body's kind of fucked up.
yeah. And if they'd said, like, you know, look, give us the camera, and they took it in, and they had the camera, and they sat it down. I don't know, it wouldn't have been as, you know, like, obviously he was moving about, getting fucking angle, you know what I mean?
Mm.
But I was like, oh, this, like, feels, like, why are they doing that? I don't understand, you know, obviously they would be having a boyfriend, and that's fine. But it's whose suggestion was it? And if it was theirs, even if it was theirs, it's still fueled by the fact that he is there recording their life.
Yeah.
It
could be, he mentioned in the commentary that Raven often liked to undress. Like,
yeah, she did that. She did do that a couple of times.
Just if he wasn't there, supposedly.
That's fair. I mean, that's fair enough. But I was okay. I could, like, I was like, okay, this is probably the least sexy sex scene I've ever seen, but it was what it was. I wasn't necessarily disturbed with that, or put off or thinking there was a line crossed there. It was just at the end, I don't know.
Aye.
It just seemed, and with like Brad going at it with Autumn and Raven holding her head up,
right,
I don't know, there was something just like, this is like, it feels a wee bit wrong,
right, okay,
you know. If it had been even, like, up front, like, you know, because there's a disclaimer up front about the drug use, and they were not saying that drug use is good. I was like, I can't imagine anyone takes drug use as good from this film, but, you know what I mean? It's pretty, like, bleak.
Yeah.
When it comes to the drug use. Like, even something like, you know, like what you're saying there, like, everyone involved agreed to everything that happens. in the film, or you know, like everything that happens in the film to be shown. Mm. You know what I mean? Even if it was something like that, I would have been like, okay, well, you know, I'll watch out. And then that happened to Walt, they agreed for it. I would have been more comfortable with that.
Mm.
And obviously they had to have it had agreed if it's in there, but you know, now, because I don't know, just nah. It, up until that point, I was completely in. I was really enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like I'm focusing on the negative, because I'd say like 80% of this film I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's something about, as you say, is repetition. There's the one bit where Brad's talking to that guy who's talking about his whole family being alcoholics.
Right, okay.
And he just keeps saying fuck. You know what I mean? It's really, really good. And like, I don't know, just some reason it just gets you. Like, you know, because you know that's like, it's like what he's focused on when he's been looking back at the footage. Like, this guy says fuck a lot, you know what I mean? And he's just like, you know, stitched it together. And I like that stuff. And that's the stuff that compels me when I'm watching his stuff. Like, you know, he gets a rhythm and you're like, that's like, it's like a riff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it almost completely. As I say, like 80-85% I totally loved. But the end and that other stuff just brought it down in my total, you know, my overall estimations. Right. For my first watch, you know.
Sure. You might prefer the theatrical cut then, because it definitely shortens the consensual sex scene and the rape scene with all misery. So arguably it flows better.
Again, it wasn't the length, you know.
Right, okay.
I mean, I don't know if that would help or not. It was
the idea of it.
Yeah, it was just the...
Sure.
Where it came from and the idea of, like, let's show these people that are in their natural lives, you know. And
yeah. One interesting thing that you could kind of pull out of the film is, as drug addicts, they all kind of say at different times that it's completely their choice to be addicts. There's a scene where Raven says, I had a great childhood and things like that, but there's also, when you dig a bit, there's history of abuse and like absent fathers and things like that.
Again, another review I read about the film, because I was looking through, see, there's no Wikipedia for this page, so I like to look through and see if there's any facts or anything like that I need to know. See, I looked in a few reviews, but the reviews were a bit weird and not great anyway. but one of them was like, I really loved how the set up straight up that they were responsible and that it was no one else's fault, they weren't fucked up or anything like that. It was them that fucked themselves up.
Mm.
And I was like, did we even watch the film? Like, I felt that was the point he was trying to make, because like, he shows them all kind of more or less saying that, no, it was me that fucked me up. And then there's Raven with her like stepdad that's obviously like calling her ugly and telling her she's fat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then there's another guy that's, what's the other guy that, something about somebody else that got abused. Then you know, there's one of the other guys that got abused or something like that. Happened.
One character, Doom, who's a drummer, dad shot himself.
That was it.
He was dying from cancer.
And he says that more or less in the same breath.
Yeah.
I think like he almost says like, you know, it's my fault that you know I did this to myself, and then he's like, you know, he's saying about his dad. He saw his dad like kill himself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's like, so that, you know what I mean. So that review just annoyed me a bit, because I was like, that's clearly to me what Valentine was showing, was like, they're saying that it's their choice, and okay, it is their choice because they've chosen to deal with it that way, but it's not like they're completely rosy backgrounds like Raven tries to portray, but they all kind of say that, you know?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean,
and even Brad, like, with his mum, you know what I mean? And then, and Angela, his fiancée, who like killed herself or OD'd.
Aye. Yeah, I mean, it's one of these classic debates you have in sociology, where is it agency or structure?
Yeah.
And with drug addicts, it's drug addiction. There is, like, stats that show that in the most deprived areas of the country, that's when you have higher rates of heroin addiction. But it's one of these never-ending debates. It's like nature-nurture in psychology. Is the kind of boring answer is it's a bit of both, I think.
Yeah.
But
I definitely think that there are people that have addictive tendencies genetically, almost. You know what I mean? Or exactly, not almost. But yeah, it's not, you know, as you're saying, it's definitely a mixture.
Yeah,
it's,
Because
there are definitely people that have lineage of like addiction in their family.
Yeah.
Who aren't addicts, you know what I mean, and vice versa.
I'm someone that tends to think to favour the structural argument as like something that defines like the human condition. About like we're not. were quite strongly conditioned by our environment and things like that. whether it's class or economics or whatever. It was also interesting that there was a quote from Brad talking about Satanism. He was saying, like, you're born a Satanist. So that's kind of taking the agency out of it. That's like the opposite thing. So, you know, I was born this way, so there's nothing you can do. But.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I mean, I never really personally knew about the connection between black metal and like, drugs thing. Mm. I know they're not every, you know, thing, but I didn't really... Is that a thing? Like, is that like a kind of... And even the Satanism thing, I didn't really know.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about black metal. that the few sections where they talk about that is quite interesting. I'd like to have a bit more about that.
Yeah, it seems like almost like a religion type, you know, mindset.
Aye.
What did you think? Like there was a lot of misery, and she was saying like she thought she might be pregnant and stuff like that. And then like you see them injecting drugs into her stomach and stuff, like.
Yeah. Oh man, I fucking love What a Misery.
She was bright. She was really good. She's a no bullshit girl as well. She tells that story about the crack whores.
Yeah.
Love that story, man. That was awesome. Definitely. It was so fun. No, she was definitely like Raven was really compelling when she was talking stuff like that. But when Autumn came in and then she went out and they were all talking about her.
Yeah.
And then she came back in and says, "Well, just tell me about you." And she was like, "Oh, really? Aye. What were they saying?" And she said, "Oh, your tattoos." She was brilliant. I thought she was really good. She was the kind of most fun character.
Yeah.
You know, that you could have a bit of a kind of, I'm kind of laughing at you, what you're saying, and I don't feel really bad about it because it's not terrible, or, you know what I mean? Everyone else was kind of quite serious and you kind of felt for them, you know, to an extent or whatever.
She kind of takes over the second, third of the film. Mm-hmm. She's like, I think she's like a crazy, like, prostitute dominatrix type thing.
Yeah.
That stuff is really interesting to me. I don't know. I don't watch a lot of these kind of like Channel 4 documentaries or anything. So I don't know if that's type of stuff, as well as the drug stuff, is something that's fairly common on TV and stuff like that. But it was like, it was interesting to me.
I thought it was good.
Behind the curtain of the crack hose.
What did you think of the injecting Jack Daniels into their neck? His neck? I didn't, like, he seemed to get like a total buzzer. Like, what was that about? You ever tried that, Gary?
No. In the commentary, Lucifer was saying at that point, Brad was trying to kick, but so he was just like drinking loads of whiskey, but he felt he needed the feeling of the needle going in. But I wasn't sure if they were actually injecting it or if that was a setup.
Right. I wondered that as well. Like, it didn't look like it was going.
Yeah.
You weren't really seeing it going in or anything.
Right. I don't know if that's safe.
But after that, it was like kind of. Ian were rolling back, but he still couldn't take his finger out of her fanny. Could he? Still getting it loudly. Mind you, stopped eventually and she laughed as if to say, "Yeah." So, like, you were talking about the cut or theatrical version. So, was that actually released theatrically, or was that just a different cut for the?
All right, I don't know if it's actually called the theatrical version.
Oh, right, So basically, the longer cut is just uncut, uncensored.
Yes.
Can I have a look at the Blu-ray?
Uncut, uncensored version.
Yeah.
That's just says black metal veins. So I don't know. I doubt it was actually released. Yeah,
so what was the purpose behind the two cuts? Do you know? And also, it
really don't
be...
know, because that doesn't have like an MPAA rating or anything.
Yeah. It seemed to be. Well, the first part of it anyway, shot still in like his like digital camera, like.
Yeah, it looked like the first part was standard def.
Yeah.
It's still 4:3. So I don't know. I mean, because I'm guessing that the cuts were for artistic reasons to create two versions. It wasn't like for a rating or anything. unless that was something to do with the Blu-ray rather than the DVD release,
maybe.
But really don't know.
Is it just really the kind of the graphic sex scenes that there's changes in, nothing else?
I think all the injecting scenes are there, which is sometimes a contentious thing as well, but seems a bit odd.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the full ones on DVD and the cut ones on Blu-ray.
Sure. Only released in the States, I take it.
Aye.
I just wonder if they would get through the BBFC over here.
Doubt it.
What's next for Luis Cervantes? All right. Is he doing... He's doing Vomit Gore 4, isn't he?
Well, yeah. Meant to be. There was a bit of buzz about that. Well, buzz on that Facebook forum. Yeah. Uh-huh. That was like a year ago or something. Uh-huh. That was around the time we did the first episode.
Yes.
In the trilogy. But that forum's kind of went to shit, yeah. I was trying to find some information about it recently, but nothing. He's not been on Twitter in ages. He's not been on his YouTube channel.
Maybe he's filming.
Could be.
So how do you think this stands amongst his work so far?
I think it's just as good. I mean, yeah. It's hard to kind of compare it to...
I guess so, yeah.
It's a different, slightly different form, but... I mean, yeah, you could... It doesn't feel... When I first heard he was doing a documentary, right, okay, well, that'll be quite separate from these other films,
yeah,
but it does... His style is all over it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean, I found it definitely a very compelling way to watch a documentary, and it was... none of it felt boring. It felt very organic and kind of fluid. And I say, other than the problems I had with it, I really enjoyed it. And,
aye.
I found it really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And he definitely got a good, like, as you say, like a really interesting bunch of people to follow.
Yeah, yeah. He's a curious filmmaker in the way, because he does have quite a moralistic view of the world in a way. Like, it's always, this film is very much about the dangers of drugs, even though it doesn't go in with that mentality, and therefore is judgmental.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't feel it's judgmental.
I mean, he puts that disclaimer on the start, this is not to glamorise drugs, and the whole trajectory is about how the real downfall that the characters suffer. I mean, possibly that might be, that might have just been something that came out of the fact that that's what actually was happening to the characters, because it's curious, the first shoot is quite happy, everyone's kind of upbeat. It doesn't balance it quite as well as something like Trainspotting, which has the real highs of drug addiction, like why do they do it, and they kind of plummets. But Trainspotting comes a wee bit back up at the end. It's quite it's an optimistic ending,
yeah,
in a way. Even though it's possibly like has a better sweetness to it, because he's Renton's like embracing the things that he had contempt for at the start. Big television and all that.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it has a wee bit of lightness at the start, the first kind of shoot up scene.
And everyone looks kind of well.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know what I mean? And...
But as the night shoot, Raven especially.
Yeah, there's a big deterioration.
Yeah.
She's the one I'd say like deteriorates the most in the whole film. You know what I mean?
She
really
completely
see her going
out
down.
Acne, although she says that was because she went to Florida.
Aye.
The sun, but I'm not sure.
And she says about like the needles,
the parasites.
She thinks she got them off the needles. She's like, I'm not a doctor.
And she has really bad abscesses.
Yeah.
Which is when you shoot up and you miss a vein.
Miss the vein.
And the drug's trying to get out. Kind of nasty. So his take on it is, I guess, that hair addiction doesn't lead to good places.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of weaves in a wee bit one of his traditional themes of the kind of corruption of innocence, the loss, by using the footage of Raven, the home video footage.
Yeah.
For as a wee girl. But if you said to somebody, if you explained to somebody what the films were about, you would think this guy's a fucking monster. And his image as well, the kind of persona that he creates, you would think this guy's the scariest filmmaker there is. To the layman. But ironically, he has quite a... No, it's not necessarily conservative, but he has a moralistic...
Yes. He's,
view of it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's very much he's very much outside of the things that are happening almost in his films. You know what I mean? He doesn't seem to like be taken and everything, you know. So he seems to be outside of it.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel about, like, you know, you're saying about you don't know if he came to the project with the, okay, maybe he wasn't into black metal, but like when he started the drug use, that he didn't necessarily come with the, you know, looking at the downfalls of drug addiction. Does that matter to you? I mean, to me, like, most, that's the kind of essence of a document, you know, it's almost like research. You know what I mean? It's like, you kind of, he's followed this project through, and then he's seen, like, oh, this is what it is. You know what I mean? To me, that's what a documentary is. A lot of time is you don't necessarily know what it's going to be.
Right, yeah.
Until the end, until you kind of see, it's like a thesis, you know what I mean? You don't know necessarily what it's going to be till you see what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that, but like, you know, I think that's probably the natural way that it should be done. A documentary, you can't make a prejudgment, which he doesn't.
Yeah.
These people are on drugs. Obviously, they're going to be in a shit place in like, you know, a year's time or whatever. But that happens to be the way it goes for these characters.
The fate of Brad is quite disturbing. If that's true, I don't know if he's still in the realms of fiction there. The title card at the end.
Yeah, seemingly after many ODs and.
He tends to commit suicide and then get committed to a psychiatric ward.
But that, I'm okay. Like, I thought that was a good ending.
I think that's real, the truth.
Well, I thought it was. It says something about his dad admits him to the.
Right, yeah.
And to me, that's a positive thing because he's getting help.
Yeah.
Did you take that as a kind of negative thing?
No, not at all.
No.
Just quite disturbing.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't find disturbingness. I thought it was, well, yeah, okay, but I didn't think it was unrealistic for him to be overdosing. Although he does say about, although it, like, again, contradicts himself earlier on as well when he says that, like, Angela was weak, you know, because she took her own life. Well, I can't imagine he says something about, like, somebody who, like, isn't strong enough basically to just keep going.
Right.
And then he says that he even tried overdosing a couple of times.
All right.
He says he tried to OD a couple of times. I couldn't do that, right?
Right.
So he basically contradicts himself, saying that he couldn't imagine, or, like, you know, people, somebody who can't just, like, get on with life, even, you know, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
And then he says that he had tried it already to kill himself. So, as I say, to conclude that, I did really enjoy it. I thought it slightly undermined itself at the end. And I wasn't completely happy with the way he took it, but the stuff that I did like, I really liked. So, yeah. And yourself?
Yes, I highly enjoy it. It is a very Lucifer Valentine style film. If you don't like his style, then
stay away.
You might not like it.
Yeah. Worth a watch, though. I'd say if you have liked his other films, or even not, let us say the stuff that is real or seems to be real was quite compelling. Alrighty. So, shall we move on to any other business, Gary?
Let's move on.
Is that what we're calling it? Any other business?
AOB.
AOB?
Yeah.
AOB. So, here we are in our section of the podcast where we cover pretty much anything else that we've got to talk about. You can expect such highlights as maybe looking forward to our Christmas special this year, Gary. A wee discussion about that.
Yep.
And I don't know what else. We'll see what else comes up. So, Gary, you got anything interesting to speak about?
Do you want to talk about Nymphomaniac?
Oh, yes.
The first official trailer
I saw
was
you
released last week there.
Can I just say, it really annoys me that I'm on my phone.
Aye.
And you post something on Cinema Subculture, the Facebook page, it's facebook.com/cinemasubculture. If you want to subscribe, give us a share, give us a like, you know, tell your friends. And I try to like it,
right?
And it likes it as Cinema Subculture.
All right,
it's a bummer, man. I'm like, because I go to like it, and I'm like, oh, I kind of like it. Because I want to, like, just say to you, oh, good one, man, that's awesome, or you know, I'm glad you posted that, or whatever. And it's such a bother to like the fucking stuff, because if I like it, it just looks like we've liked it.
Yeah.
So if anyone sees that Cinema Subculture has liked their own likes, it's me liking it, or vice versa. So anyway, Yes, the first trailer.
Yes.
There was a bit of a... I don't know if I posted up the article on the thing, or if I just spoke to you about it, about him cutting it.
Yes.
Like, was he having to cut it, or was he cutting it for a rating or something? Or?
Well, the story was that Von Trier has given up final cut on the film.
Right, okay.
Because his final version, well, the version he wanted was 5.5 hours.
Like, for the two films? Yeah.
But he's decided to hand it over to the producers just to make it a bit more commercial, just because, like, it's too long.
Yeah.
It causes, like, headaches for distribution and stuff. But I don't think it's too bad, because it's not like he's giving it to a studio or anything.
Yes.
It's like, as far as I know, it's Zentropa, and it's going to be, like, the guys, like, Peter Albeck Jensen, who's been, like, his right-hand man for years, so.
Just maybe giving it to someone that, so he can be not maybe as precious about certain things.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, it'd be harder for him to cut, kind of thing.
Aye. It is a curious development, because he's, like, kind of one of the kind of ultimate auteurs, like.
Yeah.
But
I hope we see, like, a director's cut, like, you know, his original cut. I hope that comes. You think that in the interest of making the bucks back, they would release either another edition, but hopefully just they'd just release, like, both cuts on the on Blu-rays or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
See, like, an epic 4 or 5 disc set, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Like, digipack.
I mean, for one, I'm down for the 5.5 hours. But
man, I honestly, I haven't seen, like, many of his films. I've seen Melancholy, I loved that. I've seen Antichrist, loved that. And I'm pretty much in for whatever he's got now. You know what I mean? I need to go back and check his back catalogue. But the trailer, so getting to the, so basically, yeah, it's cut slightly, but it's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be two-hour movies.
Yeah, which is, again, a little more reasonable for,
yeah,
you say, distribution and things. So they released the trailer on YouTube.
Yes.
And how long was it before it was banned?
I don't know, it was a few days, actually.
Really?
I think.
Like, yeah. Anyone who's seen it, like, you can check it out on the Facebook, or I'm sure if you... It's only in Vimeo now, I think, is that right? The Nymphomaniac trailer. But there's some subliminal vagina,
right?
And the flashing, and then a kick-ass Rammstein song,
right?
And then we've got some Bach in the middle.
Yeah.
I was showing my wife it, and I was saying, like, I was showing her the trailer, because I said that, you know, it was banned and stuff like that, and it got to the middle section. I said, see, that's like the more like what his films usually have, you know, that kind of classical music, very what's the word I'm looking for? Elegant, you know, quite, like, you know, to go with his imagery and stuff like that. But it was really kick-ass seeing, like, his, the images with that fast cutting with the Rammstein song. I was really in. And, like, as the trailer ends, and, like, the guy from Rammstein, like shouts, Nymphomaniac. Right. I was like, oh, this. I could watch this trailer all the time.
Yeah, going back to an ensemble cast, he's not done that for a wee while.
I'm glad Stellan Skarsgård's in there. I really kind of warmed him recently. Like, I really liked him in Melancholia. But he's, like, you know, he's crossed over, he's in all these Marvel films as well. I'm a big, you know, like the superhero films and things like that. So he was in, like, the Avengers, and he's in, like, recently he's in Thor 2. And it's really weird seeing him going through, like, doing these kind of really kind of, he plays kind of a bit of comic relief, especially in Thor 2, but, like, you know, different characters, quite light-hearted characters, to go into, like, these, like, really deep characters in the Von Trier stuff, you know?
Yeah.
He's in stuff before.
He's done loads of them,
hasn't he?
Breaking the Waves, Dogville.
Yeah. I think he was in that, what was it, the Kingdom, or was he in that?
Was he in the Kingdom?
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't think he was.
But he goes back with him anyway, like, I'm glad to see him in there. I don't know. Shia LaBeouf, was he meant to be from in the film?
Yeah, good question. I think it's an English accent.
Yeah, I thought that at first, but I didn't hear enough of it to think it. And I love.
Have you watched all the wee bits, the wee other clips that have been coming out?
No.
They're doing one a month.
Like, right. No, I've not seen that.
They're quite funny. It's called Jerome, apparently.
I really like Charlotte Gainsbourg as well. She was brilliant in Antichrist and Melancholia as well. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. When is it actually out?
I think it's March in the UK.
Yeah, Christmas Day in Denmark.
Might pop over to Denmark just to
Yeah, we'll need to set a date and go and see that, and maybe do that as an episode, actually. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Are both parts getting released at once?
I thought I read somewhere it would be like 1 week, and then the next part of the next week. But
that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. But I can see the distribution in this country. They'll do it like 6 months apart at least. Probably. They'll be thinking like, oh. And it's in 3D. Nymphomania in 3D. Right, they'll do it in 3D. But I mean, the cast is like, you know, crazy. Like, I mean, as I say, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Stellan Skarsgård. So I've got a blocked nose, and I'm not managing my pronunciation. Shia LaBeouf, Jamie Bell, like Rand, you know, like Christian Slater, Corey Nielsen. Sorry. I mean, it goes on. There's loads of people. Udo Kier,
Uma Thurman.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe. Mm. Looking at the other names I know.
Christian Slater.
Said that already?
I did.
Yeah, listen, Gary, for fuck's sake. Anyway, there's loads of kind of like big stars. Like, again, you know, he's worked with Dafoe and stuff before, but there are lots of people that you wouldn't necessarily think would be in this.
Mm.
So I'm excited to see what happens. I'm kind of staying away from, I know the rough story, but I'm trying to stay away from like knowing too much about it, you know. But I feel the trailer was just perfect tonally to get you like excited for it. It felt like a it was the Von Trier equivalent of like the Avengers trailer when it came out, you know, kind of buzz for the mainstream, you know what I mean? This, I think that was what I kind of felt watching this kind of, it felt like a kind of an event, you know, this kind of thing. So it was fun. Yeah, there you go. We'll do an episode talk more about that stuff when it comes. What else we got, Gary? Anything you want to speak about?
One other Von Trier related thing.
Sure.
Breaking the Waves is coming to Blu-ray in the UK in March from Artificial Eye.
Oh, Artificial Eye. Yeah, they've done some of his stuff before. Mm. They've released Antichrist and Melancholy.
Yeah, yeah. Happy about that. I was always... there's a Japanese version that's been out for about a year.
Right.
That I'd always been thinking about, but the prices are crazy on Japanese stuff, and then imports, customs fees are pretty bad. So I'm glad I don't have to do that. Yes, I'm curious one to see how it's going to look, because it was shot in film, and then it was transferred to standard def video and then back to film.
I remember you telling me this before, so, why was it? Why was that? Was that a
they transferred it just for editing, to create an editing master, but then they thought, I quite like the look of that. Looks kind of shitty. Yeah, so that was the first thing he did, playing with video.
Right.
Yeah, and then they get into the whole Dogma thing.
Well, that's quite cool.
Still very poor on the Von Trier Blu-ray catalogue. Yeah. It's not much coming at all.
I hope they give us some good extras in the Blu-ray for that then, because Artificial Eye are like really good sometimes and really kind of like strangely like dry all the times with some releases. There's not like a consistency really with them.
Yeah. The DVD release, I don't know if it's the UK one off the top of my head though, but there's been good extras on that film before. So I didn't realise it was that. I don't think Artificial Eye did the DVD, the UK DVD release, so maybe they've picked up the rights. But
I'd mentioned before I was going to pick up the Tenebrae Steelbook, the new one from Arrow, with the remastered transfer. Did you see they confirmed that it's going to be the French transfer?
Oh, is that right?
You know, remember I told you there was a French transfer that was in the French Blu-ray? That is a cracking transfer, and everyone would compare it to the one that Arrow released previously.
Right, okay.
But the French Blu-ray had burned in subtitles, French subtitles. So, you know, it wasn't really worth getting that, but they've got a transfer, obviously, without the subtitles burned in. But there's a few new extras as well.
I noticed that,
I think a bigger book.
Right.
They're going to get, so that's always good. there's some new interviews, things like that, and a couple of other like little kind of snippets of extra features. So that's kind of cool, like, because it's... I would have bought it anyway, but it's nice to have like those little extras and stuff. Definitely. Are you getting it, do you think?
I haven't pre-ordered yet, but I will.
Yeah, I think it's only like $14.99 or something on Zavi, so... Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to that. I should see what it looks like, because I did enjoy the film. So yeah, it seems like the French Tenebrae was released in 2010, and the UK one was released in 2011. So it must have been just who owned the rights or who had the transfer. I really don't know. how that happened.
Curious.
I mean, they said that it was being funded by Xavi, effectively, for them, the exclusivity, so maybe they couldn't afford to do it. I think they've bought the French transfer and they maybe done some restoration work to it.
Right.
Further polish it or whatever. But anyway, I'm happy either way because I'm glad because I didn't think it was a terrible transfer, but it was hard to watch. I had to turn the sharpness down. I spoke about it before. You know, you had to make it kind of watchable because it was kind of very obvious that it was like digital, I'd say, noise rather than anything else. But I mean, it was a shame because it seemed like a fairly nice transfer underneath that, you know. But I'm looking forward to that. I think it's released mid December. So yeah, there you go. Mm. Anything else, Gary?
Did you see the new website?
I just saw a post today before I came here. I haven't registered for it yet. Apparently, got 100 points. I don't know what the points count towards.
Aye, they're doing that as well. A rewards scheme.
Right. So have you registered?
I did.
Yeah.
I think they said something like you're getting 10% back or something.
All right. So it's only if you buy from the site, do you think? You get the points. It's not like a Disney thing where you can, like,
get
a card and the releases.
So. Aye.
Ah, well, I mean, that's fair enough. As you say, if they're going to stop charging up front for pre-orders, then I think I would use them probably more than I would, unless I can get, a really good price somewhere else.
Even if they do, I might start going to them. Just because... Eureka site do is brilliant, where you can get a title like 3 weeks before the street date and stuff like that.
That's true. Like DVD World USA do that as well. No, that's fair enough. And there's that, because recently, as always, I forget I've got pre-orders there, and then you have to try and find money for things last minute. At least with that, it's pre-ordered and you're done. You're in and out and you're paid. If you've got the money there, then it's done. So that's a good thing, I guess. So that's arrowfilms.com, isn't it? I think the website is. So check them out.
Yeah, hopefully. I hated the last site. It was difficult to navigate, I felt, to find all the different, like, Arrowdrome and everything. It's all kind of jumbled in together.
Yeah. Hopefully it's a little cleaner and lets you find out what... Because they have a blog now or whatever that shows you the kind of stuff that's going out of print and things.
Aye.
Maybe if they have a section on the website, that would be a lot more helpful. So, Gary, my thoughts turn to our Christmas special this year. Effectively, once again, as I'm not attending my work Christmas night out, my Christmas night out will be this. What about you? Are you going to any Christmas night outs?
No.
No, right. So it's going to be this for us.
Yes.
So we're talking beers again.
Okay, aye.
Yeah, that good? Yeah. You've got the guitar out. I thought we could do more traditional songs this year. Real songs.
Okay, aye.
But I feel like trying to recapture the magic of... last year that no one has heard.
Yeah.
Do you still have those songs?
Oh, aye.
We can maybe put them up as a wee extra.
Right. maybe.
Look, because they've been coming here a wee bit less, a bit less frequent, I think we owe people a wee bit of a laugh, maybe. Maybe some subliminal codes that you could put in to find a secret web address where we put up this file to us being drunk and singing. Anyway. Do you think we should look at this year? I've had some ideas.
Right. I haven't thought about it all that hard. The only one that came to mind is Black Christmas. But,
yes, that came to my mind as well.
Right, aye.
So, what I was proposing, I thought this year, what if we did like a triple bill?
Triple bill?
Triple bill.
Okay. Not challenging not a kill bill, for kill us bill. On this year's... Right.
But I thought that will stop us from singing as much if we've got, if we've got the time to go through. Bumper size episode.
Right.
You could even split it if you want. We could do like a keep it up half before Christmas, half after, something like that. We could work something out. I would suggest Black Christmas, definitely.
Right.
And I thought Silent Night, Deadly Night.
All right, okay.
You've not seen that, I've seen that. But and I've also got, which I've not watched yet, and it gives me an excuse to watch it, Christmas Evil.
Right.
Which I thought we could watch.
Aye.
And they're all slasher films at Christmas. Two with Killer Santa type people. So yeah, I think that seems like be fun to do. We won't take it too serious. These are obviously old films. Most people who listen to the podcast have probably seen them or at least heard them. If not, check them out. I've seen two out of three. definitely worth a watch. I hear Christmas Evil's meant to be pretty good. So, what else we got lined up for the Christmas special, Gary?
Well, I quite like to do these kind of end of year lists and things like that. Might talk about our favourite Blu-ray releases of the year. Might talk about things we're looking forward to in the coming year, or like things that are our most wanted films that have yet to receive a Blu-ray release.
Right,
like
okay,
that,
yeah.
Just general stuff, favourite films of 2013 or something like that. Yeah,
I like that, definitely. And we can talk about like stuff we've been watching this year. I like to, like, last year you did a bit of a kind of 25 days of Christmas with your Christmas movies. Remember you were trying to watch a different Christmas movie every day or something like that. We can discuss like anything we've watched recently and things like that. If anyone wants to like post up their favourite Christmas movies, horror / Christmas movies, or regular mainstream Christmas movies, pop them on the blog, or email them at cinema_subculture@hotmail.com, or pop them on the Facebook, as I said before. And we can give you a shout out and say this is what these people thought. But no, I like that idea, like, of doing the kind of roundup of the year and kind of favourite stuff that we've either picked up or stuff that were predictions, like stuff that we think, like, you know, I bet this will be in Blu-ray. Last year we would never, I don't think we spoke about Nosferatu. I think I actually did. I actually said that was my most wanted.
I think so, yeah.
Last year in the Christmas special, it was Nosferatu was one of my most wanted to see on Blu-ray. So I got that. And then we got, there'd be no Zombie Flesh Eaters by that time last year. We mentioned that.
Did we? Yeah, that came out, was that July or something?
So we did not bad this year. We need to listen back to last year's episode and see what we spoke about, and maybe reference back to it. I mean, join us for our annual podcast night out /in. Are we dressing up again?
Hats in that. Why not?
You getting reindeer antlers this year?
I thought you were meant to
do last year. You didn't do it last year.
You had the hat, I had the antlers.
That's right, you want this. No, we were meant to have that, but we ended up just both on hats. Because you didn't do anything about it.
Who had the antlers? No, I had the antlers.
It was the
broken thing, and I had to stick it up. Who was that? What was that?
I think you're dreaming. When was this happened?
Yeah.
Don't know, Gary.
No, I did have the antlers.
Sure. Hold on to a check. You're lying to me. Oh no, you may have had it, actually.
Yeah, maybe I didn't wear them because it was broken. Is that right?
I think those pictures.
I just tried to stick it up with tape, but it wasn't working. I even put a wooden skewer inside the fabric.
Oh, I think you're making this up. I don't remember any of this. Oh no, yeah, there we go. You did. You had the antlers on.
Aye, fucking
pictures
right.
Pictures and everything. I'm wearing that jumper. The new. I don't have new clothes. Let's keep the same old ones. So we'll do that again. Anyway, we've got a few things planned, guys. We won't bore you with the details just now. Stay tuned for the run up to Christmas. We'll hopefully have it out, hopefully the week before Christmas. All things being good.
Considered.
if we manage to do it, we'll hopefully have it out like the week before Christmas. And hope everyone's run up to Christmas goes well. And we'll see you nearer Christmas. All right, guys, that's everything for today. Thanks very much for listening. I've been Simon.
I've been Gary.
Goodbye.
Nightmare.